Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at retiresecure.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to the Lang Money Hour. We are talking smart money tonight with retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, who is also the author of two editions of Retire Secure and the Roth Revolution. Tonight he's joined by Martin Shankman. Martin is also a CPA, attorney, and estate planning expert. Besides being a regular source for the Wall Street Journal, Fortune, and Money magazine, he's also a regular guest on the Today Show, CNN, and the NBC Evening News. He has written an astounding 34 books and 700 articles. His newest book, which we will talk about throughout the show, is Estate Planning After the 2010 Tax Act. Excuse me. Very appropriate because that is what we're talking about tonight. So before I turn it over to Jim, the show is live. Please feel free to give us a call. That number is 412-333-9385. Again, 412-333-9385.
Into the content, I will just say that Marty's one of these estate attorneys who is just so highly respected. He very often teaches at Heckerling, which is that's kind of like where the gurus of estate planning meet in Miami after Christmas every year, and he's just widely recognized. So you know, go to almost any estate attorney. And you say, hey, Marty Shankman says this, they'll know who he is. And he's just come out with two new books, one on his own. We'll give you contact information. And then another one with Steve Akers, who is also perhaps, you know, one of the giants. So anyway, Marty, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show.
No, my pleasure, Jim. Not meaning to give you a hard time when we start, but I've never spoken at Heckerling. It's the one place I haven't spoken. So let's just be honest with your audience. But thank you for all the other flattering, kind words.
Oh, okay. I actually took a jump there because in your book you quote something from Heckerling, so I just assumed that you were there.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
All righty.
By the way, the people should know also that there's two books out, and the proceeds go to charity from the professional version of the book, which is available from AICPA. On CPA to Biz. It's www.cpatobiz.com, and all the proceeds go to charity. We make nothing on it. And Steve Akers was really a kind gentleman to agree to give all the royalties that will come from that to charity. So they shouldn't think of us as shameless promoters for our book. So, okay?
Well, as a matter of fact, I actually checked on that earlier today, and it takes a little bit to get to it. You have to... Where it says if you go cpatobiz.com, you can't type in your name. You actually have to type in the name of the book. And
I'll call and give them a hard time.
I would. And they say it's not available until January 31st.
It's actually available today. It came into the warehouse today. I'll give the appropriate people.
All right. Well, that is important because I know that we have a lot of financial professionals. But anyway, I was able to get in by typing in estate planning after the 2010 Tax Act. You were good enough to email that to me, and I think it is a great book. And the other thing that I liked about it is that it actually had specific advice for different people in different situations that we'll cover later on. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about a little bit, Marty, is when I first called you and I had asked you to be on the show, you said, hey, you know, this is a brand new ball game. This is the biggest change that we've ever had, and this is just kind of a sea change. And I was wondering if you could tell our listeners why you think that, you know, a lot of times, that hey, there's a change in the tax law. Okay, it's a nice thing to know. What are the changes? But listening to you, you put on a fairly convincing case that this is a really big deal. And I thought that before we get into the nitty-gritty, that you could just lay out the big picture of why you think that the most recent change is such a big deal. And I guess I should also ask you to tell people the most important parts of it. And you could take it in any order you like.
I'm gonna give you an answer that's unexpected for you and the readers that I think is really the most critical impact of it. in a real nutshell, what the tax bill did is the gift, estate, and generation skipping transfer tax, and we'll hopefully have time to explain all of that, there's a $5 million exemption, which means until you give away at death or during life $5 million, there's no tax cost. If you have a spouse, and on your spouse's death, he or she doesn't use his or her exclusion, you as the surviving spouse can use what's called portability and get their unused exclusion and then, in effect, double up and give away $10 million. We'll come through, hopefully go through a lot of that because none of it's nearly as simple as it says, and there's a lot of very creative planning for people with a lot less money. So if anybody out there listening, you know, doesn't think they will ever, barring winning a huge lottery, have $10 million, don't hang up on the show, because this is a huge opportunity for lots of different types of people that aren't that rich. It's not only about wealth. But here's where I think the biggest game changer is. I heard a fascinating statistic a week or two ago that 39% of Americans, 39% believe they are or will be, before they die, in the wealthiest 1%. We're still the land of wishful thinking and opportunity, which is wonderful, very optimistic. But those people drove the estate planning industry, because even people that didn't have an estate tax issue or not one of significance still may have done planning before because they wanted to be protected in case they got to that wealthy strata. I think that fear factor that drove so many people to do estate planning is now gone. So here's where it's a game changer. There are huge opportunities for people even with far less wealth to plan because of what this law did. But I think the biggest danger to the people out there that are the non-professionals is that they may very well be lulled into thinking, gee, I don't have to worry about estate planning, and I'm using that phrase intentionally, estate planning. My estate will never hit $10 million. I don't have to worry. I'll get a cheap will online or go to the guy that did the attorney that did my house closing and let him or her do a $100 will. That will be devastating for lots of people, because estate planning has nothing to do primarily with taxes. Estate tax planning is only a component of estate planning. And everything else that you as a financial planner, the accountants, the attorneys, insurance consultants, everything all the professional, all provided to their clients as part of what is estate planning, all that still remains vital even if the estate tax planning doesn't apply to somebody. And that's the game changer, and I think for professionals, because you said you have some financial planners in the audience, the toughest job for a professional is to get that message across to clients. The consumer needs to be educated to understand when you go online and do a will for $79.95, you're not getting the decades of experience of a professional, whether it's your attorney, your accountant, your insurance consultant, your pension consultant, to help guide you. And there's a lot of value in that. And hopefully that's a message we can bring across throughout the show. So I think that's the biggest game changer, not what people expect. They expect to hear a tax issue is the biggest game changer. That's the biggest game changer.
All right, well, how do you think that this will impact most of our listeners in terms, let's say somebody has an old will from 10 or 15 years ago, or even 5 years ago, and let's assume that we're talking about a less than a $2 or $3 million estate. What impact or what are you recommending to your clients that are in that situation?
The first mistake those clients have made, those consumers, you need to see your estate planner really every year. You really do, even if it's an hour meeting or a half an hour meeting. There are always loose ends. There's always new planning issues. It's not just about your will. It's not just about tax issues. There's a range of different things. And one of the most important lessons of people that got hurt bad financially in the recent recession, or in the recession we're still getting out of, depending on your view, but that's a different expert, different day, is if you had an estate or financial planning team where your financial advisor, your accountant, your attorney, if they simply made one 10-minute, 15-minute conference call, which is no big deal to do, and you don't have to be a Rockefeller to afford it, and you get all your advisors on the same page, and you have everyone looking after each other and after you, you will get a much safer and better result, and you will avoid a lot of the traps, the improper diversification, the over-reliance on aggressive alternative strategies, all the stuff people got into trouble with much of that could be avoided if you simply patched together your estate and financial planning team and had them communicate. So that's the first message. Let me tell you three things that that listener with the couple million dollar, $3 million estate in the old will should do. First, you got to get stuff revised. All the formulas, all the language, all the provisions in most documents, it was done when the law was different. Second, when you revise that document, you need to contemplate the wide range of possibilities of what might happen. The $10 million for spousal may not be available to a lot of people because portability is far from perfect. The $5 million and the $10 million with portability, those things are only in the law for 2 years. In 2013, if Congress doesn't act, it plummets to $1 million and a 55% tax rate. That's what's on the books. So all the confusion that everybody was put through over the last year not knowing what the law is going to be, we're going through it again. So one possibility, whether you make it a 5, 10, or 50% likelihood in your mind, it's a possibility that the law is on the books, million exclusion, 55% tax rate. So the person with a $2 or $3 million estate could potentially face $1 million, $1.5 million tax cost if they do nothing and die in 2013. In 2013, we may continue the same $5 million we have now. It could go back to the $3.5 million and a 45% rate that everyone thought we were going to get this year. It could go down to the point of being completely repealed because so few people are paying the tax. It could be anything in between. So people need to evaluate how their planning and their documents work regardless of which of those possible scenarios comes out. If you're not doing that, you're not building in enough flexibility, you could have a problem. So you need to revise everything. But I think there's some very interesting and valuable planning opportunities for that client to think about today. So, for example, if that client were a physician and worried about malpractice, a business owner worried about lawsuits, someone that's retired and sitting on various boards of directors and worried about potential liability, the change in the tax law to a $5 million exclusion or exemption, if you want to call it that, in 2011, this year, even though you're below the $5 million, don't focus on that. Focus on what it does for your asset protection planning. That huge exclusion now permits people to transfer large amounts of wealth out of their name, subject to fraudulent conveyance and other rules and issues, in a way that they never could do before. The person with a $3 million estate, if they wanted to have transferred $2 million into an irrevocable trust to protect it from claimants or creditors or divorce or whatever it was, and I'm not going through all the issues with that, but assuming you've passed those hurdles, you had a major problem up until last year, even in 2010, because of the $1 million gift exclusion. That was it. Everything over that, there was a huge tax to pay. This year, those wealthy people that are not wealthy enough to worry about the tax can use this as a golden opportunity to protect their assets. Huge opportunity. There's another category, completely different, of people that can have a huge benefit from this that also may never have to worry about the estate tax. If you have non-married partners, in the past, they faced a very negative tax system because the estate tax did not recognize the non-married partner relationship, and you could not make, as a married couple could, an unlimited transfer to a spouse because a spouse and a partner were not equated. The new law is just as biased against non-married partners. This fancy portability concept that hopefully we'll talk about more and warn people of the dangers of how much is lacking in it, it's not available to a non-married partner. So for non-married partners, why is this a golden opportunity? If one partner has much more wealth than another, which is very common, it was very costly, prohibitively costly in the past, even to transfer half of a house to the other partner to equalize or to bequeath on death an expensive home or vacation home or both to a non-married partner. With the $5 million exclusion, this is a golden opportunity to transfer wealth between non-married partners. And those consumers should not lose this opportunity, just like the doctors and others that want to do asset protection should not lose the opportunity, because it's very possible in 2013 the gift exclusion will drop to $1 million. So for everybody out there, you got to redo all your documents, because you have to go over with your lawyer in your state, in your area, what these changes mean. And in many cases, I think in most cases, you have to rethink the formulas and replace them. Second, if you fit into a unique category, worried about asset protection and lawsuits, which is an awful lot of people, non-married partners, which is a substantial number of people, this is a golden planning opportunity. Don't lose it because you don't know what's coming down the pike.
Well, let's focus on your idea of transferring assets or even making a gift. And when you're referring to, let's say, same-sex partners or even just unmarried partners, do you anticipate having a direct gift to the other partner, or are you anticipating a gift to a trust that can provide income or principal to both partners?
Jim, I'm going to prove to all your listeners that I'm really a lawyer. You ready for the answer to the question?
It depends.
It depends.
Fair enough.
It depends. Now, is that a good lawyer answer or what?
That's the perfect lawyer answer.
I've answered it directly and given no relevant information. It proves I'm a lawyer.
It sure does.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of trusts, and not just because I'm a lawyer and make a living doing trusts for people. Most of your listeners are probably in Pennsylvania, I assume. It's certainly a chunk of them, so I'm not going to help them anyhow. And you have people all over the country, so they're going to need to go to a lawyer in their state. But the reason a trust is so much more powerful, if you give assets to a partner, same sex, not whatever, but we're talking the whole broad category, if the relationship breaks up, what happens? Those assets are gone. Now, maybe that's okay, maybe it's not. If you give assets to a partner and that partner and you live in a state like New York that only has $1 million exclusion, or New Jersey with 675, and someone told me I think Ohio or Illinois had even less than that, you're going to create potentially a state estate tax on death. So if you put it in a trust, you can minimize state estate tax, and that has not gone away, and that's something people still need to consider.
And
you have not addressed the asset protection issues. So if I give a partner or spouse, anybody, assets in a trust, if they get sued, those assets might very well be protected. If I give it to them outright, I could lose half of my assets that I just gave them.
And I should also mention, in Pennsylvania, there is no exclusion. So the first dime is taxed in Pennsylvania, and there are different rates depending on your relationship, and a non-married partner is the most expensive rate.
Wow.
So there's an mm-hmm. unlimited marital deduction in Pennsylvania, meaning that you can leave as much money as you want to your spouse, and then the next most favorable is lineal heirs, that is children and grandchildren, and there's stepchildren, and then but the non-relationship is the worst at 15%, and I'm afraid that we have to take a short break.
We do have to take a short break. You're listening to Martin Shankman and Jim Lang on the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. We are here with Martin Shankman tonight, and of course, Jim Lang.
By the way, if you did hear the commercial, it said, well, gee, maybe too much money is going into these trusts. And Marty is saying, hey, I like the protection of these trusts. And that's very interesting, because Marty, in his example, said, well, maybe you are a physician and you, or maybe you sit on some boards. And he gave some very good examples of people where I think trusts were very appropriate. On the other hand, I'm probably a little bit less trust-oriented and more for, let's call it the average couple that doesn't have any obvious tort liability. I tend to keep things simpler. So as much respect as I have for Marty and the work that he does in my own practice for people who don't have some of the asset protection issues or obvious asset protection issues, I might take a slightly different course, although frankly it really and I think that Marty and I would agree with this, that it's really up to the client. It's not up to the attorney to determine the client's fate.
I think the discussion that you just had, Jim, and I'll convert you because I don't agree, but the discussion you just had And also, I want to go back to the ad that you just played while we were on hold on your Roth conversion. The whole point of estate planning is for that consumer to sit down with their advisors and get a coordinated plan with their attorney, their accountant, their financial planner, their insurance people, and sometimes it's one person may wear more than one hat, but to get your advisory team, get their input, and come up with a cohesive plan. It's more important that you go through the process of what Jim just discussed than which answer you come up with, because the answer you come up with should be the right answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim and I have different views of it, and if we were both your advisors, you would hear Jim's view of simplicity, my view of be careful because you can't fix it later, and then you'd make the decision that's right. But then you're the informed consumer. That's what the process is about. And my fear, which is what I said when, you know, what I thought the biggest sea change is because consumers no longer fear this evil death tax is going to decimate their estate. They're not going to go through the process. So instead of getting the education and the knowledge and the advice of different advisors, they're going to get the quick, cheap answer, and that's almost never going to be the right answer. Because you know what? You may opt for Jim's incorrect approach of the non-trust, which I'll forgive you for. We're not going to discuss football teams.
But oh, no.
Don't start.
Don't you start.
Don't start. But you're not going to necessarily address all the myriad of other things. What about a Roth conversion? Do you convert? Don't you convert? Have you really analyzed it? It amazes me how many clients come to me, and I don't sell any products. They've never looked at long-term care insurance, and they're in their 60s or 70s. They've never addressed it. Many people, a shocking number of people, I would say the majority of people that we see are all high-wealth clients, don't have an umbrella or personal excess liability policy. That kind of core planning, the Roth issues, the investment, all these things are part of your plan, and that's what you need to go through in order to come to the right result for you, whatever that result is.
Well, we're in perfect agreement. In fact, I can't do an estate plan without a complete list of assets, and we go through a fairly extensive fact finder to see where people are. And I almost can't help myself in terms of wanting to make Roth IRA conversion recommendations, and now without the burden of worrying so much about gift and estate taxes, I think in a way that actually gives us more freedom and more choices in terms of making gifts. So let's just...
Absolutely, and I just hope that all of the advisors listening and you and I can educate consumers, so instead of them adhering to the simplistic-minded advice of, gee, you don't have to worry, which is dangerously wrong, you can get them to focus, and we can get them to focus, on the myriad of other planning issues that are so vital for them.
Well, let me tell you one pretty common one that I have been dealing with for years. I work with a lot of older clients, and a lot of them who are doing quite well and not spending anywhere near what they could afford to spend, partly out of habit, partly out of whether you want to call it depression-era mentality, and partly out of the... fact that they think that they are limited in their gifts to their children and grandchildren by $13,000 per year. So some of them are in their 70s and 80s, and their kids are at the time in their lives when they are, maybe they need a down payment for a home, maybe they need a down payment for a car, and they're really kind of, some of these kids are really struggling, and in a way it doesn't make sense for these kids to have to wait until they're 60 before they inherit any money. But what's happening right now is nothing. That is, the parent is holding on to it, and they haven't even considered the idea. Or for example, if somebody's interested in making charitable gifts while they are alive. And I think that taking a look at the big picture, both the asset value and what people want to do with their money, and should they make a Roth IRA conversion, and should they make gifts to their kids, and should they make gifts to their grandkids, and should they support their grandchildren's education, etc., I think is really critical. And I know, and I guess, Marty, you and I are coming at it from a little bit of a different viewpoint because we're both CPAs and we're both somewhat quantitative, but I think that's some of the real juice in estate planning.
Oh, absolutely. And the one thing I would add, every person, every client, and I'm sure you'll second this, everybody's got some unique twist or nuance or personal issue that if they start to explore that big picture as you described it, those personal issues, those unique circumstances for them will get addressed in the bigger picture context, and they'll come away with really solid advice. Too many people have defined estate planning as being getting a will and saving tax, and not minimizing the importance of that, but that's never been what it's about, never at all. Now, let me address one of the comments you raised, because it's an interesting twist with this new law. If you make a charitable contribution, it was very common for lots of clients, and I always encourage clients, make a bequest under your will to charity. It's a wonderful way. Forget the tax issues and the legal issues and everything else, and it doesn't even have to be a huge amount, but it's a wonderful way to demonstrate to your heirs the importance of giving back to society. But now, because the exclusion is so high, and let's leave aside state estate tax for a moment, you don't get any charitable contribution benefit on the estate if your estate is not over the $5 million, or $10 million if you're married and you have portability. So for some clients, I would say a large number of clients, it may make more sense to put a provision in their durable power of attorney authorizing their agent to make a charitable bequest or gift before they die. For a lot of clients, it may be as simple as leaving a personal letter to their children, dear children, in order to help encourage you to be philanthropic and give back to society, I'd like you to write out a check for $25,000 to ABC Charity. This is a non-binding request. So they've simply received a bequest under the will, and they have this non-binding letter that I would suspect most heirs will adhere to. They'll make the gift. The difference now is they're going to get an income tax deduction, mm-hmm. and I would guess most income tax rates are going to go up at some point in the future to address some of the deficit issues. Mm-hmm. So they're going to get a big income tax deduction, whereas if you pay it under your will, under the current scenario, if this law continues, you've gotten no deduction. So a lot of little things like that will have to be rethought, and that's all part of why it's important for clients to sit down and review their documents with their planners.
And that's a very interesting point, because up to now, I was actually not a big fan of leaving a bequest in your will the way I used to do it, and still do, although I'm now I have to relook at it, is I would try to take the charitable element as part of the IRA or the retirement plan on the theory that we want to give the after-tax dollars to the kids or grandkids and give the IRA or qualified money to the charity, so that way the client never had to pay income tax on the IRA and the charity doesn't have to pay income tax on the IRA. But your idea of...
That was a great strategy until everyone converted to a Roth.
Well, in fact, interestingly enough, I would always say, even if the best thing for you to do is to convert everything, I would tell people to hold up on some of it to leave to charity. And with your idea is, hey, we're not going to, for most people, they're not going to have a federal estate tax anyway. Might as well let their heirs get the tax deduction. And that probably even encourages Roth. And this isn't going to be a Roth show, but I know that, actually I don't know, but I suspect that you are a fan of Roth
what?
IRA, of Roth IRA conversions.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Jets. I'm sorry.
You have to watch out here. This is Steeler country. There are people crazy enough to drive to New Jersey.
That's why I'm carefully making the call from Jets territory here in New Jersey. I wouldn't be brave enough to come there and say this stuff.
Well, for whatever it's worth, everybody in Pittsburgh was rooting for the Jets last week.
That's true. Absolutely.
We were pretty ecstatic about it.
Temporary Jets fans.
And the reason is because we thought that we had a much better shot at knocking off the Jets than losing at New England.
Anyhow, there's another concept like this that needs to be rethought. It was very common for us to always encourage clients to leave in their will, even if they said not to, the ability for executors to get paid their executor fees. A lot of times, if somebody was naming family, which is very common as an executor, they'd say, oh, don't, you know, write that they shouldn't get a fee. I never was a fan of not paying, because it makes sense that if someone's doing a lot of work, they should get something for it. But the other motive for it was when you had a 55% federal estate tax and maybe 60%, you know, when you counted the state, that was a huge number. So even if the executor had to report this as income, getting it out at that estate tax deduction, you were having an arbitrage between the estate tax rate and the income tax rate. That's gone. And I think the comment about the charity and the executor fees and all these issues, it just shows the myriad of ripple effects that this new law has on what has been fairly standard planning. And again, that's why it's so vital for people to sort of sit down and rethink everything with their advisors, because they may find yet other ripple effects that affect what they're doing.
And I'd love to go on, but it's time for our second break.
It is time for our second break already. We'll be right back. I want to remind everyone that we are live. If you have a question, we have the best two people here in the business. 412-333-9385. Give us a call. We'll be right back on the Lang Money Hour.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
Alrighty, welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. We are here with Marty Shankman and Jim Lang. And one thing I want to mention is this show is so great that you may want to listen to it again. This show will be replayed on Sunday at 9 a.m. So if you're just sitting there waiting for the Steeler game, if you're sitting there waiting for the Steeler game, you could listen to us for an hour. We're on from 9 till 10, and new in 2011, we're actually on every Sunday, whereas before we were on every other Sunday. So this year, we're on every Sunday, 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So tune in, and then if for some reason you miss that or you want to hear it again, you just jump on to retiresecure.com, and it'll show up there very, very shortly, so you can listen to it all the time.
And sometimes at retiresecure.com, you don't have problems with the signal. And it sometimes actually is a better listening experience.
Jim, can you imagine if somebody listens to this show repeatedly, just how fascinating they'd be at a cocktail party?
Well, I actually think that this is fun stuff. And one of the challenges that I have, particularly when I get a guest like you, is to try to not get too technical, but try to bring it down so that everybody understands it. It's a little bit easier in a workshop because you know there's people there and you can look into their eyes and you can see
when the eyes start to get glazed over.
Right, and that I can't tell you that's never happened. Although today, you know, and I did this I did a teleseminar for about 80 CPAs and that was another one where I really couldn't gauge their interest. But actually some of the material in your book was very helpful, and I'm very glad that I got it to you. And by the way, what's going to happen, and always happens, is that we run out of time. Mm-hmm. So before we run out of time, I'm just going to put in a little plug for the one book that I read, which is, well, I didn't read it all, 300-some pages, word for word, but I went through the table of contents and read everything that I wanted, which is, and I typed in a... This is more for financial professionals. Although I think it'd be fine for a lot of sophisticated listeners. It's if you go to www.cpatobiz.com.
That's the number 2, CPA 2, the number 2, BIZ.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right, CPA number 2, biz.com. Type in where it says search, type in estate planning after the 2010 Tax Act. It's wonderful for professionals. First, it's a great book. Then you get a PowerPoint presentation that you could actually give to your clients, which I thought was very well mm-hmm. done. And the only thing I didn't get was the actual the CD where you are actually making that presentation.
You get the whole thing to train your staff as well. And by the way, again, every penny goes to charity, so don't feel we're being selfless promoting our book here. No. There is another version for consumers that's a fraction of that size, that's $9.95, a cheap $10 download on Amazon. If you just put in the 2010 Tax Act or estate planning after 2010 or my name, Shankman, you can get a cheap version for consumers on Amazon.
Yeah, and you can download that right to your Kindle. So those are very good resources. And particularly for the professionals, you know, this is the kind of thing that you have. The other thing, I'll put in one last shameless plug and then we'll move on. You have a number of letters directed to clients in that package for the professionals that I thought were very good. So, you know, you have different examples of different types of clients and different messages that you want to present. And I think for some people, that alone might be worth the cost of admission, because I think the idea is you're trying to motivate people to get their clients to come in. Now, I have never been successful at getting clients to come in anywhere near once a year. In fact, sometimes on a first time, client will come in and I say, oh, it says here that if something happens to both you, little Johnny goes to Aunt Sue and Uncle Bill. By the way, how old is little Johnny? Oh, he's 47.
Yeah.
So sometimes people don't review it as accurately as you can.
But see, I think, Jim, if people would only understand the message that you and I have repeated a number of times, it's not just about a will or taxes. It's about integrating and addressing the myriad of different issues that we've talked about. They will understand that there's a lot more to be gained and a lot of peace of mind, which is a very rewarding feeling if they know all these little ducks are in a row.
And the other thing is there are some complications that, frankly, I didn't know about with this law until I read your book. And one of the things that I thought was simple, and I am now convinced it's far from simple, is the concept of portability. And I thought maybe if you spent a minute or two on that, because I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, well, if it's less than $10 million, I'm fine from a tax standpoint and I don't have to do anything. But that doesn't appear to be accurate. So
it's not at all accurate, and you're 100% correct that that's what people are hearing from the general media, and it's very dangerous. Let me tell you first again what portability is, just so everyone understands the new buzzword. If your spouse dies, you can use the amount of the $5 million basic exclusion that they didn't use. So it sounds simple. So your spouse dies, you survive on your death. If you did no other planning, you get to exempt $10 million from the estate tax. Some of the complications that make it far from simple, and I think it's beyond what we could do for today for the show, but the complex generation-skipping transfer tax, which many wealthy people use, and even people that are not so wealthy but want to protect assets going down multiple generations, you can't use that with portability, so you lost that. Leaving assets outright to your spouse has none of the asset divorce malpractice protection that leaving it in a trust would have. So you lose all of that. The portable amount is inflation indexed until your spouse dies, but once your spouse dies, it's not. The average female in our country outlives the average male by, I think it's about 6 years. So if your husband dies and has a $5 million portable exemption, you live for 6 years. If the market runs up, you could be well beyond whatever it was. So that's another downside. And here's the clinker to it all. This is supposed to simplify everything, and we haven't even touched upon the rules, and it's probably sounding complicated already. But in addition to all those twists and complications, and many that we didn't go through, on your husband's death or the first spouse that dies death, you have to make sure that a tax return is filed for that person's estate electing to give you the right to use the portable exclusion, or you don't get it. But if somebody has $1 million or $2 million estate, are they going to even think of doing this because they have no tax due? So it's not the simplistic, obvious answer that many think. I believe what it really will be is that when anyone passes away, you want to make sure you get your accountant to file that tax return. But I think you really need to do proper planning to address all the issues we've just talked about. And if something goes wrong and you didn't get the planning right, at least you got this as a fallback. But I think it should probably be viewed as more of a fallback than as an affirmative planning device. So it's unfortunate. It was supposed to simplify things, but it hasn't.
And I think the other thing is another game changer that I picture, and I'm not going to try to turn this into a Roth show, which I did a lot of Roth shows last year, but I think that we are in the, let's say, a new environment where income taxes are going to be much more important than estate or gift or transfer taxes. And people have to start thinking about income taxes. So, for example, let's say that you are a high income taxpayer, or even a medium income taxpayer, which is probably what the majority of our listeners are, and now you find out, well, now I probably don't have an estate tax problem, and let's assume you have some highly appreciated assets, it might make sense to gift those assets to your children or grandchildren, have your children or grandchildren sell them. Right now, there's a zero capital gains rate for people who are in the 15% or lower tax bracket. So in effect, you can not only transfer them gift and estate tax free, but then you can also get rid of that capital gain that you would have had to have paid.
I 100% agree, and I would go a step further. That's also why you need to plan, because what happens on death? You get a step up in basis. Where's that going? What's going to happen with the income tax in the future? If they don't bring back the estate tax with a greater strength and a greater tooth, if you will, you know, a greater bite rather, where are they going to raise money? Very likely from raising income taxes. So a lot of the planning that's going to be done is things like you just talked about, Jim, which is wealth shifting. In the old days, before everyone was using a fancy technique called discounts for estate planning purposes, the common use of a family partnership was to shift income to lower bracket individuals, the concept, Jim, you just discussed. Well, maybe the partnerships that people had used for obtaining discounts for estate tax purposes will just morph into partnerships that are designed to shift income. And again, I think this goes back to one of the themes of our discussion tonight, is that there's lots and lots of unexpected implications that affect far more people than just those with 5 million estates. And I hope people that have even a $1 million estate didn't tune out, because we've talked about a lot of issues that will affect them as well. And the income tax that you just brought up is another one.
Yeah, and your example of a family limited partnership. And by the way, I am not averse to asset protection. In fact, I have clients, physicians, who have transferred most of their wealth to a family limited partnership, not for estate tax purposes or even income tax purposes, but for client protection. And now, though, let's say that partnership and the provisions around it, and also in trusts that I have drafted that were meant to save estate taxes, need to be reviewed, not necessarily for taxes, but for other purposes.
I think that's a very important point. Any existing plans and documents should be reviewed and see how they work now and what needs to be done. But unfortunately, because the law is only a two-year time frame, you have to be very careful what you do currently. But I think they all need to be looked at. For example, if somebody has an insurance trust, they may have bought insurance, survivorship insurance, when the estate tax exclusion was a mere $600,000. Do they still need the coverage? I'd be very careful canceling it just yet, because there may be lots of other reasons to keep the coverage, but they should evaluate it so at least they're informed and understand why they're keeping it.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. One of the things that that you have in your book is you talk a little bit about disclaimers and the idea of flexibility in estate planning. And that's something that I am a big fan of. And I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about how flexibility, and I'll tell you what triggered that, is when you say, hey, we don't know what's going to happen in 2013. Ideally, again, somebody will come up with an appropriate estate plan and then review it in 2013. But to quote you, we don't want to sound like the boy who cried wolf when before we were saying, hey, it's going to go back to $1 million in 2010. And, well, no, we were wrong. There's no estate tax in 2010.
Which is a possibility.
Yeah, which is a possibility. So could you talk a little bit about the concept of flexible documents, and specifically the doctrine of disclaimer?
Let's not explain all the complexity of how it may apply in 2010. Let's talk about people that want to plan their estates now.
Fine.
Let's say somebody has a $2 million estate or even less, and gee, why not just leave everything outright to my spouse because I trust him or her and there is no tax, and why worry? Well, you don't really know what the future is going to bring, not only in terms of taxes, but in terms of liability issues, remarriage issues. there's a whole raft of uncertainties. But you may not want to force that trust, and you'd like to preserve, as you said, Jim, flexibility. One approach that's commonly used, and I admit I'm not a fan of it, and I'll tell you why, too, so people have the full picture. But a simple concept is I leave everything outright to my wife. If she disclaims, which is another word for renounce or renunciation, she files certain documents with the court saying, I don't want the money that Marty left me. If she does so, then under the terms of the will, the assets I left her, instead of going outright to her, will go into a trust for her benefit. What it does is, with very little extra cost, because it's a fairly simple drafting technique, you're creating a will that gives your wife or surviving spouse, husband, or partner, you could use this in a partnership arrangement, the flexibility to decide after you pass away whether or not they should accept those assets directly or whether they should put them in the trust. And the trust could then have some protective features to it, but you're giving the surviving spouse the decision-making authority with after-the-fact ability. It's very rare in tax planning or legal issues to be able to use after-the-fact hindsight to make a decision, but here's one where it works. And they have within 9 months of the date of death, so long as they didn't accept any benefit from it, to execute a disclaimer and pass the assets into a trust for them. So if right now you say, gee, with $5 million, I don't want to burden my spouse, we're retired, there's no liability, I'm not worried about him or her remarrying, I'm going to leave it outright. It doesn't take much more to have the extra page in your will that gives the ability to fund a trust through a disclaimer. So let's say your surviving spouse thinks, you know what, maybe I will remarry. Or maybe there's a lawsuit pending because you were killed in a car accident and there's a lawsuit pending. Let them disclaim and put it in a trust to protect it. You're giving them an option.
Yeah, I sometimes call it a free second look, and I would take it one step further. I would give them multiple levels of disclaimer, meaning that to draft in such a way that they could either accept the bequest, have the money go into a family trust, or even a trust now that might be a little bit less tax motivated. It could go to the children or trust for the children, and it could also go to grandchildren. So I sometimes like to have multiple levels of disclaimer possibilities in documents.
It's a very flexible way to do it, and the consumer listeners, if they meet with their attorney, what Jim just described is very simple to do. And it's very powerful because it gives you lots of options to deal with the what-ifs that you may not be able to foresee now. The one negative, Jim, that has me try to dissuade clients from relying on disclaimers, and your experience may be different, is that I find that most surviving spouses are very, very reluctant to give up any measure of control over assets. But if the trust that we structure has got a lot of flexibility in it, and it's automatic because that's what we've provided for, they kind of understand that the decision was made and they're okay with it, and we end up with more protected estates by having the trust required to be funded than by giving the flexibility. And again, it'll be different for each person, but I think, you know, consumers should weigh those pros and cons with their attorney and come up with a plan that they feel comfortable with for their family and their circumstances.
Well, by the way, Natalie Schoed, who is one of the finest estate attorneys, particularly with an area of expertise in IRAs and retirement plans, has some of the same concerns. And that is, it might be appropriate for the spouse not to keep everything, but the spouse is often reluctant to. I will say, in my planning, and again, we actually try to educate clients that it's very important to really keep an open mind to disclaiming. We have not had what I would consider, other than maybe one time that I can remember, what I thought was an inappropriate decision to keep everything rather than having anything go to a trust or a child. One person didn't do what, frankly, I expected them to, or their spouse probably expected them to, and that was kind of too bad because... Although actually, in the end, it might work out well anyway, because the it ended up being a $3 million estate, and they chose not to protect anything. Maybe in retrospect, they're going to be okay. But I have not had the problem of people inappropriately not disclaiming. And Natalie has probably had experience closer to yours. But
by the way, it's important for people to understand, Jim, and if they're willing to invest a little more time and perhaps a little more money, the trusts can be created with a fairly significant amount of control and flexibility and still achieve some of the protections. So, for example, you could name your surviving spouse as a co-trustee. You can name your surviving spouse as a co-trustee and give them the right to withdraw money to meet their standard of living. In tax jargon, it's called an ascertainable standard. You could just make the surviving spouse even a discretionary beneficiary, not give them any direct right, but give them carte blanche to fire the institutional trustee and name a new trustee. So if you have control over who has control over the purse strings, and as long as it's an independent trustee, like a bank, you can have a fairly significant measure of control over the trust and still accomplish these goals. But whichever end of the spectrum you end up on, trusts are not a canned product that all are the same. There's lots and lots of different decisions, and if people will invest the time, the effort, and the money to go through those, they could tailor almost of all the different things you and I have talked about. They can pick and choose a lot of the different options and tailor something that fits them perfectly.
Yeah, so just for example, I like to include in my trust the ability to distribute money for grandchildren's education. I'm a big fan of 529 plans. I'm a big fan of straightforward gifts, but I'm also a fan of if somebody does want to have money protected from creditors, or perhaps we need it for tax purposes, although again, that's changing, to give the grandparent the ability to take money from the trust and use it for their grandchildren's education.
All the good, because it's more flexible. By the way, another issue with trusts might be, especially if the trusts are formed while somebody is alive, there may be more flexibility to shift that trust to a lower tax state and potentially defer or save state-level income tax. So that's yet another reason that we hadn't talked about earlier.
Well, in fact, the choice of state is important. We have advisors from all over the country listening, but the local listeners are from Pennsylvania. I think we mentioned a little bit that Pennsylvania has no exemption from estate taxes, but Pennsylvania does not tax IRAs and retirement plans. So Pennsylvania is not necessarily a bad state to retire in, because Pennsylvania doesn't tax proceeds from IRAs, doesn't tax Roth IRA conversions, and that's something that you have to take into consideration. But maybe you have a couple thoughts on state residency. In fact, I know you do because I read them in your book. So
I would suggest, though, that the four states that seem to be on the forefront of trusts and trust planning are Delaware, South Dakota, Alaska, and Nevada. And for people that are really looking to do some good planning, they need to evaluate using the laws of one of those states and citing or basing their trust in one of those states. But that's way beyond what we can do, I think, tonight.
Right, and we're rapidly running out of time, so I just wanted to clarify that for people. That doesn't mean you have to go move to one of those places. It means that it might make sense to establish a trust where one of those states' laws applies and you use a trustee from one of those states.
Exactly correct.
All righty. We're at the end of our show, unfortunately. Marty, thank you so much.
My
pleasure. This was excellent.
Other than the football issues, I think we did good.
I think so. I think we can get past that. Well, thank you again. And for those of you out there who want to hear this again, it will replay on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And then you can find it on retiresecure.com. And it looks like the moral of this show was that if you don't have a will, go and get one. If you have one, go see your estate planning attorney to make sure it's in line with these new laws. And thank you for joining us tonight. You've been listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at retiresecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at retiresecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.